It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running on this, the 27th day of September 2017. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that, of course, is where you go. You know, unless you've never listened to the program before, you know what I'm about to say. If you want to become part of the madcap, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the hours when the program is live from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, yes, indeed. Just pick yourself out a screen name and a password, both of which are free. Everything about the Horn is free. And by golly, you'll be greeted by Anatole and Jug of Punch and Squeaky and capably moderated by midweek utility pinch hit chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Yes, indeed. You certainly will be. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and we are at midweek. It is the final prayer meeting Wednesday of the month of September 2017, and we are desperately trying to raise enough money to finish the month even and lick the Lithuanian, nudge the Norsky, and cash the check. That's right. All those challenges are on the line, and the fundraising goal for this evening. And this has nothing to do with next week, my absence next week. Remember, I'm not going to be here next week. I'll be in D.C. working on issues related to mountaintop removal and the ongoing poisoning of Central Appalachia by the coal industry. And so we've done absolutely nothing with fundraising for next week. So by the time I get back, we will have a giant screaming fundraising deficit to begin the month of October. Because right now we've got a giant screaming fundraising deficit just to end the month of September. This is listener-supported broadcasting. I wish I could say otherwise. Well, no, I don't. I don't want advertising here, okay? I wish I was just independently wealthy enough to fund this and never have to say anything. But I'm not, and, you know, the lottery hasn't hit. So that's how we gotta go about doing this. So fundraising deficits, yeah, we got one of those. The fundraising goal for this evening is, I'm trying to just cipher this up from last night. $457. $457.10. Yes. So that's where we are. That's where we are at this point in time. Thanks go out as ever to our subscribers. Thank you very kindly to partial sponsors of the program, Susan in Massachusetts. Thank you, Susan, and thank you very kindly to our buddy Robert in Australia. Okay, that's why it's not as bad as it could be. Also, thanks go out to Chris in Germany. Thank you also to Henry. As a result of all of those people, it's as low as it is. It could have been considerably worse. So 457.10. Oh, to heck with the, let's just say 10 at 45 and 45 at 10, and yeah, because there's nobody 1 at 457. That ain't going to happen. And we got to, and look, let's just, we'll work on it, and hopefully it'll get better. If you would like to be one of those people who helps to keep the horn afloat, who helps to keep things going month in and month out, we desperately need to reach a much larger number of subscribers. Just go to headonradionetwork.com, click the little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation, put in $10. Unless you're George Soros or George Clooney or Barbara Streisand or Oprah Winfrey or Leonardo DiCaprio or Robert Redford or Jane Fonda or any wildly wealthy supposed, well, you know, we're told, you know, liberals, progressives. Unless you're any of them, just put in the $10, click, make this a recurring monthly donation, and, well, you'll be, you'll get your name mentioned every month on the day when the subscription hits. If you don't like PayPal, there's always the Patreon campaign, patreon.com/BobKincaid, and that's an easy way to set it and forget it. That comes out on the first of the month, okay? Not on whatever month you do it on, or day of the month you do it on. That comes out on the first, regardless of the day of the month. So, for instance, if you jump in on the Patreon campaign this evening, you will not be billed for, you know, 4 days or so, you know, till October the 1st. Clear as mud, right? Yeah. So those are the thanks that go out, and hopefully we will, hopefully things will get even, we'll get better, a lot better, so that I'm not, you know, shouting up from, you know, the bottom of the well, right? Yeah. Lassie. Here, girl. Come here, Lassie. You're not Lassie. I will not put the lotion on my skin. No. So you see how that goes. Okay, so that takes care of, doesn't take care of. That's just where we are. That's just where we find ourselves this evening, going into the rest of the week. It would be nice to finish even and qualify the horn for all of those, for those three bonuses ongoing. Okay. Again, a reminder: I won't be here next week. I'm sorry. There will be reruns running, and there's no getting around it, and there's no way to deal with it otherwise. So I hope everybody will be here when I get back. I'll be tweeting and Facebooking along the way as much as I can, but we'll be in meetings just about every day of the week. No, we'll be in meetings every day of the week. There's no just about it. And we'll talk some more about it maybe Friday on the front porch, so hopefully you'll be here for that as well. It is prayer meeting Wednesday, and we've got some prayer meeting Wednesday kind of stuff to go into. I'm going to forego the shtick. I think prayer meeting, we can use prayer meeting Wednesday to talk about a theocratic religious maniac, can't we? I don't see why not. I mean, you'd think, It kind of fits, sure. So, let's see. Hold on. Let me do this real quick. Okay. I had to restart one of the two connections here because Frontier sucks, right? It absolutely does. By the way, yeah, you know, there is one sponsor to the program. And it's that time of year too. So friends from our friends over to Horn Labs, I need to tell you about a wonderful new nutritional supplement product that will do you absolutely no good whatsoever, but we're gonna pitch it to you, right? Because that's what over the air talk radio runs on. Do you find yourselves just a little bit draggy here as we've crossed the line past the autumnal equinox into the shortening days of fall? Do you find yourself just kind of blah? Well, courtesy of Horn Labs, I've got the answer for you. Yes, I do. Absolutely do. I know how to pick you up. I know what'll get you up and keep you going. That's right. Perky Pumpkin from Horn Labs. We use a proprietary blend of only the finest organic, non-GMO, free-range, cruelty-free, vegan pumpkin to bring you Perky Pumpkin from Horn Labs. Oh, you were very close, Randy and PA. Not pernicious pumpkin. Pernicious would mean bad. No, this is Perky Pumpkin. This is the kind of pumpkin that'll just put a lift in your step and a twinkle in your eye and get you going through these days as the light begins to fade. Perky Pumpkin from the fine folks at Horn Labs. That's right, Perky Pumpkin to keep you perky all day long. You know, I've never cared much for pumpkin. And to this day, the only way that I can get my daily fill of that wonderful pumpkin goodness is with Perky Pumpkin from Horn Labs for only $29.95 a month. For only $29.95, friends and neighbors, we'll send you a month's supply of Perky Pumpkin capsules. And for only 10 cents more, we'll send you a 2-month supply. That's $60 for a two-month supply of Perky Pumpkin. Yes, that proprietary blend of pumpkin and, well, pumpkin spice. You know, the spice works wonders in conjunction with Perky Pumpkin from Horn Labs. Yes. You thought I was going to forget, but how could I? I can't forget because my brain's in overdrive thanks to the miraculous powers of Perky Pumpkin. You better believe it. You know, or not, because it's fake. It's not real. It doesn't do anything for you, just like none of the other nutritional supplements that are hustled on various and sundry radio programs on terrestrial radio and by right-wing talk hosts and everything do anything for you. Steve in New York wants to know, do I have to eat it or could I rub it on my ass to clear up a rash? You can do both. You can rub it on your ass, scrape it up, put it back in the capsule, swallow it, and you will be as perky can be. Perky Pumpkin from Horn Labs. Yes, that's right, Brother Deacon Asa. Perky Pumpkin even comes with a free pack of test strips to show that it is doing absolutely fuck all. Because we're that kind of operation over at Horn Labs. Horn Nutritional Laboratory Supplements. Doing absolutely nothing for anybody for at least the last month and a half. Right. Okie dokie. So let's, what I was saying, when I forgot to tell you about Perky Pumpkin. Well, thank you, Steve, in New York. I would like to give you a cowbell for that. Okay. Just a little one. It wasn't that funny. And I didn't go somewhere else. You can rub it on your ass. No, I didn't do that. That's what the cowbell's for, is having the common decency not to take the program into the gutter that early on in the process, because we've got 2 hours and 45 minutes to find our way to the gutter. But, no, prayer meeting Wednesday, and oh, the little old blue-haired ladies down in the fellowship hall, I want you to know, they can make some perky pumpkin pie. The folks over at Horn Labs, before they reduce everything down to its platonic pumpkin essence, they sent some perky pumpkin over, and I want to let you know it's like that movie with the fish or the aliens or the mermaid or something. It made the little old blue haired lady. God Almighty, you just got to be. I mean, mercy sakes, it was terrifying. That's all I can tell you. It was terrifying. And we won't be giving them any perky pumpkin anymore, or the perky pumpkin spice, because they made some pies that, it was more than just pie. Let's put it that way. But it's prayer meeting Wednesday, and I think that is a more than appropriate time to talk about a theocratic religious maniac. Well, theocratic, religious. Well, that comes from the Department of Redundancy Department. But a theocratic maniac in the form of Roy Tola Moore. Yes, as Brother Deacon Asa pointed out, Roy Tola is entirely a creature of our creation here, and I'm determined to make it stick. Because it fits so well. He has all the religious tolerance and all of the wisdom of a real live genuine Ayatollah there in Talabama. He wasn't a judge so much as he was a religious leader when he was on the bench there and had to be removed. Roy Tola Moore is now the Republican nominee for the Senate seat made vacant by Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. And so, this isn't just a theocratic maniac story. This is a journalism fail story. Because I've been following the coverage pretty much all day. And what I've heard is that this was a big repudiation for Donald Trump. Roy Moore registering a big win over Donald Trump's chosen candidate, Luther Strange. Yeah? Right. Okay. So he won. He did. He won. How big it is, that's another question. Now, this Roy Tola Moore is a guy, for instance, who, unlike just about anybody else in civilized America, to the extent that America is civilized, Roy Tola Moore still refers to people by the color of their skin. By that, I mean, he has made specific reference to the reds and the yellows, talking about indigenous people and talking about people from Asia. Roy Tola Moore refers to them as the reds and the yellows. Roy Tola Moore has said that Keith Ellison of Minnesota, who is a fine member of the House of Representatives, I need hardly say that, who is proudly returned to his seat by his constituents, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, atheist, agnostic, animist, what have you, repeatedly, Roy Tola Moore has said that it's illegal for Keith Ellison to sit in the House of Representatives because he is Muslim. Roy Tola Moore, you know what he thinks about people being able to marry the person they love, regardless of gender. You know that. Okay. Well, Roy Tola Moore was broadly and widely touted in the for-profit media today as being likely to be the next senator from the state of Alabama. And they went so far at one point in time on MSNBC, which I was watching earlier, they had an interview with Senator Chris Coons of Delaware. And they said, well, Senator Coons, what do you think of Roy Moore? Will you work with him? Yeah, what kind of zany, half-assed question is that? Will you work with him? One, he was not elected to the Senate last night. He was officially became his party's nominee for a general election, a special general election to be held on the 12th day of December 2017. But the supposed liberal network just said, ah, screw it, he's going to be the senator. Which is largely the attitude that most of the for-profit media have taken. Ah, screw it, he's going to be the senator. And so Chris Coons said, well, yes, of course, I'll work with him. And this is why I could never be a member of the United States Senate, because my inclination would be to say, well, of course I won't work with a son of a bitch like that. I mean, if we're going to start throwing around son of a bitch and calling people sons of bitches, how about we call a guy who refers to other people by the color of their skin a son of a bitch? That's a whole lot more appropriate than calling someone a son of a bitch who takes a knee in silent protest of the ongoing crisis we have of police in this country gunning down unarmed black people, isn't it? I'd say it is. But that was Chris Coons' answer. But here's the problem. And I don't like to put forward problems without putting forward solutions. The problem is that unlike all the extremely well-paid for-profit media journalists that I saw out there in the last, 12 hours or so, I actually went and looked at the voter turnout for the great big earth-shattering victory that Roy Tola Moore and Steve Racist Bannon registered last night. Now, those of you who follow me on social media will know the answer to this question. Those of you who do not won't necessarily. What was the voter turnout for yesterday's runoff election in Alabama? Anybody? And for bonus points, what was the voter turnout in August for the first primary election for the Republicans there? Anybody? Bueller? Yeah. The turnout in Alabama last night, according to the Alabama Secretary of State, was 14%. Roy Tola Moore beat Big Luther Strange 55% to 45%. One 10% margin doth not a landslide make. Two, 55% of 14% equals 7%. And I checked this on a calculator. I didn't try to do this kind of complex, complicated ciphering in my own little pumpkin head, even though it is currently enhanced with Perky Pumpkin from Horn Labs. It's still just a little pumpkin head. 55% of 14% is 7.7%. That's right. This gigantic, earth-shaking, groundswell movement that made Roy Tolamore the Republican nominee for Senate to fill the vacated seat of the junior senator from Alabama, made vacant when Kaiser Kumquat tapped Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III to be the Attorney General of the United States of America, is precisely 7.7% of the eligible voters of the state of Alabama. Now, I'm not some well-paid, high-flying, highfalutin, exalted, noble campaign advisor or anything, but I'd say that 7.7% is nothing to jump up on the barn roof and crow over. I'd say it's actually kind of embarrassing. There you are, standing up there and waving your tiny little pea shooter, freedom protector in your Woody from Toy Story cowboy costume, like Roy Moore did, and all you can scrounge up is 7.7% of the voters. Now, that extra credit question. What was the voter turnout back when it was a full-on free-for-all to get to the runoff? Back when it was Strange Country versus Roy Tola Moore versus Mo Brooks Les Brames. Why, the turnout for that election was 18%. So what you have in last night's runoff is roughly the same number of people who voted for Luther Strange and Roy Tolamore coming back to vote again in the runoff, and the Mo Brooks Les Brames crowd said, fuck it. And that is the earth-shattering groundswell for Roy Tolamore. You're impressed, aren't you? I don't mean with my ciphering skills. I cheated. I used a calculator. I mean with that whopping 7.7%. Yeah. Is there anything to be gleaned from those numbers? Anything at all? The one report that I looked at from a TV station in Huntsville cited what was called voter burnout. That the voters are just sick and tired of all the mud being slung among all those upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, God-fearing, evangelical, gun-dementalist, ammo-sexual Republicans, Christians. They're sick of it. And all day long today, inside the giant for-profit media fail, once in a while they'd mention that there's actually a Democrat running against Roy Tolamore. Not very often. But there is. And like I said, I don't like to talk about problems without offering up at least something resembling a solution. And I have one. And it's, by my lights, it's not just a solution that could help Alabama. It's a solution that could help this country. To wit, there are no other elections scheduled in the immediate future anywhere in the United States that have anything resembling the importance that this race does. This race takes place within the confines of an overall political landscape where it's just kind of a yawn. There's nothing really out there. I mean, yeah, there's work to be done in D.C. There will have to be work have to be done to resist the newly announced but not particularly detail rich tax reform bill that is long on talk and short on details, except to say that it's a tax reform bill that's being offered up in conjunction by the House Republicans, the House Senate, and the Senate Republicans, and of course the Tangerine Tiberius, which is to say, it is a tax reform bill that is going to, you know, screw ordinary America. But we already knew that. So out there in the American political landscape, there's not much. And that means that if, say, Democrats and progressives wanted to, they could actually, for pretty cheap, pour a ton of energy into that Senate race and have a meaningful shot at winning. Roy Tolamore, for instance, knows what kind of shape he's in. How do I know how he knows? Because I saw who he had on the podium with him. Yeah, right there was racist Bannon to get the neo-Nazi vote. But there was also a preacher. Now, Roy Tolamore, I guess you could say, is a lay minister. He certainly speaks with the authority of the pulpit when he declares that his almighty God should be enshrined, despite the First Amendment of the Constitution, into law. But he's traveling with a preacher these days. And the preacher he's traveling with is an African-American evangelical by the name of Saron Stacy. This may not make any sense to you yet, and that's okay. But who is Saron Stacy? Well, Saron Stacy used to have this thing that he did every Saturday. Saron Stacy would suit up and put on the uniform of the University of Alabama Crimson Tide and run with the football in his hands. And make tens of thousands of Alabamians jump up and yell, "Roll Tide!" Okay? He was at the University of Alabama from 1989 to 1991. When he got done playing for Alabama, he was drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles. He played one game and was released. And eventually he went up to the Canadian Football League and carried the football for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders in the CFL and went over to NFL Europe and ran up and down the pitch for the Scottish Claymores for a bit. He became the Scottish Claymores all-time leading rusher with 2,350 yards. He's had a there's a tragic aspect to Mr. Stacy's life. Back in 2007, he and his family were in a head-on collision. And this is the kind of horror that no one wants to even contemplate. And I'm not making light of it. This is heartbreaking. They were head-on as they were traveling. In a, they were in a minivan, and his wife and four children were killed in that collision, and he survived. He and one daughter of his survived the wreck. Everybody else was killed. And at the funeral, and this is one of those places where I would not be okay. At the funeral, the preacher said, "I know this is horrible, but you got to understand, Saron, how many souls are going to be saved out of this." That's right. The good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical minister of the gospel who preached that funeral said that God murdered Saron Stacy's family to save more souls. That's a horrifying thing to say, isn't it? But that kind of thing gets said at funerals. And Saron Stacy became a preacher in his own right. And so there he was at various rallies for Roy Tolamore preaching his gospel. Oh, by the way, who else was at the Roy Tolamore events? I mean, these are some damn luminaries. I told you about racist Bannon being there. Nigel Farage of Brexit fame was there. And this is practically Elvis. Phil Robertson, the very one, the duck doofus, the duck dumbass, was there. Along with Roy Tolamore and Saron Stacy. That's some serious luminary. Yeah. And with all of that, he still couldn't drum up more than 7.7% of the Alabama electorate to vote for him. But Saron Stacy is there for a reason. And more of a reason than, Nigel Farage or racist Bannon or duck dumbass. Saron Stacy was there to whip the faithful. And, you know, in particular kind of the faithful. He was there to, I mean, look there, Roy Moore's got one of them black fellers up there on the stage with him. See, he ain't no Klansman and no racist. And then Sir Ron Stacey was brought on to say, I salute this flag. They play this national anthem. I put my hand on my heart and give honor to whom honor is due. I'm going to honor this flag for all days. And why? Because someone died for it. Someone paid a price for it. Jesus Christ! No, he didn't do that. He didn't add the Jesus Christ part. And then Sir Ron Stacey jumped out there and started going on and on about the Homer sectionals are getting married and about the slutty women that goes out and gets abortions. Who can tell God it's okay for a man to marry another man? Who can tell God it's okay for a woman to abort a child? If things are ever going to change in America, we got to bring this place in order. We don't need people going to Washington, D.C., telling us one thing that's popular, but then getting up there and selling out. He continued. He became a professional gospel sharp after the horrible wreck that in which you know his God murdered his family. He's been joined on the stage along. He's been on that same stage with Godzilla from Wasilla. He's shared the same stage with Nazi sympathizer Sebastian Gorka. So I don't feel any real compunction against questioning the validity of his faith. Yeah, I know. Jesus didn't hang out with the well-heeled and the well-to-do. He hung out with the prostitutes and the sinners and the tax collectors. But really, Sebastian Gorka, Sarah Palin, and racist Bannon? Racist Bannon, who's probably less of a Christian than I am, and I ain't one? Yeah, that ain't witnessing. That is, well, there's a word for that. Yeah, that's pandering. Because you see, if a real, live, honest-to-goodness effort was made, Doug Jones could beat Roy Tolamore. The registration gap between Republicans and Democrats is about 3 to 5. For every three Democrats in Alabama, there's 5 Republicans. But the Republicans didn't show up to vote. And you know what? December the 12th, 2017 is not going to be a big turnout day. Unless someone makes it a big turnout day. And so the choice has been made pretty clear. A guy who thinks that his word is law versus a guy who used the law to put in prison the Klansman who murdered little children by bombing a church. I will take that messaging opportunity any day of the week and 5 times on Sunday. So here's my solution. I think, and I've mentioned this before, I think Barack Obama probably has a greater drawing power than Sir Ron Stacey. And again, I want to emphasize, ain't nobody doing much of anything right now. It's not like people are terribly, terribly, terribly busy with other campaigns. hell, by December the 12th, and with the Thanksgiving break and everything, Congress isn't even going to be terribly, terribly busy about that time or in November. One of the reasons I'm headed to D.C. next week is because, frankly, they're actually working right now, and they'll work through October. But then they'll be gone. Oh, quicker than you can say, lobbyist shrimp party. Right. And so, you know, really, I mentioned that this was an opportunity not just to do good in Alabama, but to heal some wounds. And here's my crazy suggestion. My idea. Bernie Sanders needs to go to Alabama and campaign on behalf of a man who established a pretty credible civil rights reputation by prosecuting the Klansman who murdered little children in a church bombing. And here's the part that'll drive some people batshit. Hillary Clinton needs to take a little time out and go to Alabama and campaign on behalf of the man who put Klansmen church bombers in prison. And so does Barack Obama. You do that. You let America see those two people working for a common purpose, and you might actually translate that into some hope for 2018 and 2020 as well. I'm not here. I mean, you can hear Bernie. I'm not here to talk. No, I'm here to talk about Doug Jones. I'm here to talk about why it is absolutely necessary that we send Doug Jones to the Senate and keep a theocratic maniac out of the Senate. Bernie has considerable popularity in Alabama. Bernie was packing some rallies during the campaign. We know Hillary Clinton has popularity in Alabama because she mopped the floor with Bernie in Alabama. And there wasn't no Debbie Wasserman Schultz about it, and there wasn't no but her emails or anything like that. She built a relationship that allowed her to win the front-loaded solid South. I think it is a pretty fine idea. And it's a statewide race. So we're not dealing with congressional districts. It's winner take all on a statewide basis. And since they got nothing else to do, focusing on this and trying to put together a massive get-out-the-vote effort, well, it's not going to be a big expenditure of resources. It's not like you're trying to run a campaign in California or Texas. Or even a district that's got a chunk of Atlanta in it. There's a possibility here. The Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee needs to get on board? No, no, no. To be fair, Alabamians are probably not chomping at the bit to have Chuck Schumer come down and talk to them. But you know what? People like Chuck Schumer have the power to whisper in a few ears and get some of that money cycling down there. And it won't take a bunch. You know how much Doug Jones has right now? $250,000. Well, see, there it is, and that'll be the downside, Asa. But Bob, which is not gimmick infringement. Don't even try that, Ron. Doug Jones ain't nearly ideologically pure enough to be fit to serve as a Democrat senator from Alabama, is he? He's good enough to be the Democratic nominee from Alabama. He's not running around saying that he wants to tear anybody's marriage apart. He's proven his bona fides relative to civil rights. I don't know how many U.S. attorneys for the Northern District of Alabama there were before Doug Jones that didn't prosecute those scumbag Klansmen, but he did. And you know what? The person who can win a Senate race in California is not the same person who can win a Senate race in Alabama, and vice versa. But a few sweet words whispered in a few ears of the kind of people who give money to dark money groups, because by God, if that's the game they want to play, let's play it. And saturate the airwaves with Doug Jones ads. Jesus God, can you imagine? I mean, the for-profit media was wetting itself today talking about what a big deal that runoff election was when it only garnered the participation of 14% of that state's electorate. Joe Scarborough and Mika would probably have a baby live on air if Doug Jones could stop Roy Tola Moore from going into the Senate. It would be seismic. It would, for the Republicans, it would be cataclysmic. It would be monumental. And it's not that much of a long shot. Because I refuse to believe that, and that word, oh, that dangerous, dangerous word, believe. I refuse to believe that 7.7% is enough to get you a Senate seat in any state. A note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Ron says, I said it before, Roy Moore said he was going to bring the country back to God, whether we want to go or not. A slow-rolling theocracy is what's going on. Can we just get one of these sons of bitches to admit to their desire to replace the Constitution with the Bible? What? Ron says Doug Jones is in the new Star Trek. Gotta be a different Doug Jones. This is G, and you know how it is with lawyers and initials. This is G. Douglas Jones. So, I'd say, you know, and God knows I haven't been in communication with the Jones campaign. they need, you know what? They need enough donor money to put up a somewhat more splashy web page. Because there's not much there. I went looking today to just to try to find some sort of contact to try to get him on the program. Not a lot. But all of these groups, all of these outfits, all of these people who claim to know what the real mind of the Democratic Party and the real mind of the progressives are. This would be a great put up or shut up moment. If Democrats nationally can't come together, if progressives and liberals nationally can't come together when there's absolutely not another damned thing going on to try to stop an avowed theocratic racist lunatic from getting into the Senate, what will they fight for? Yeah, I did, Steve. Steve from Georgia Stan asked, did you see Roy Moore twirling his penis extender gun around like Yosemite Sam when he was on the campaign podium? Yeah, that was down in Fairhope, Alabama a couple of nights ago. And he looked about as silly as shit because it was a teeny tiny little pistol. He's not even manly enough to carry a... No. That was a... Well, what that was, and I mean no sexism, that was a lady gun. That was a purse gun. That was a purstle. And I say that because I know that there are gun people out there who are going, what? That's what he concealed carries? Really? Yeah. And you know what? I don't care if Doug Jones stands up and says, excuse me while I whip this out, and pulls out a dirty, hairy, 8-inch barrel 44 Magnum hog leg and says, yeah, that's a pistol. I don't care. Because this is one of those line-in-the-sand moments. This is one of those, if you can't stand up for this, what the fuck will you stand up for and when will you do it? So, yeah. Bernie, Hillary, Barack, stand not upon the order of thy going, but go at once. Get thee to Talabama. Go. Because it just may be that state is ready for this. And what if it is? I got a clip here. At least I hope I do, still. Just a minute. There it is. I got a clip here, and I'm playing not because I'm a fanboy or anything, but Joe Scarborough and I are about the same age, but that's not all we share in common. Joe Scarborough and I are about the same age, and Joe Scarborough and I are both, we were both raised by working class people in Alabama. Joe Scarborough and I are both about the same age, raised by working class people in Alabama at about the same time. and are products of the public schools of Alabama. We are both alumni of the Capstone, University of Alabama. We both had a cup of coffee in law school. And so after the Klan, the Trump Klan rally in Alabama this past Friday, Scarborough was a little bit put out. He was put out with Alabamians. And this transpired.
So you mentioned John McCain. President Trump continued to focus his blame for health care's failure on Senator John McCain, tweeting a 6.5-minute compilation video of the six-term senator and writing, quote, a few of the many clips of John McCain talking about repealing and replacing OCARE. My, oh, my, has he changed.
Wait.
Complete turns from years of
talk. Hey, Alex, could we make a 6.5-minute video? Alex, are you there?
I'm there. Yep, yeah. Right here.
Well, we want to see your pretty face.
Yeah.
Could we make... Hey, Dan, how you doing? Could we make a 6.5-minute video of Donald Trump and all of his promises about health care reform?
No, that would have to be 66.5 minutes.
Yeah, but if we could make a 6.5... If you could ask everybody for tomorrow, we're going to make a 6.5-minute video of all the promises Donald Trump made about health care reform, mm-hmm. which John McCain thought he would be voting for.
Right.
When Donald Trump became president of the United States when he was making his
promises. Can we commission that?
Yeah,
that?
We'll try to whittle it down to 6.5 minutes.
Try to whittle it down to 6.5 minutes.
Earlier in the day, he slammed McCain during a radio interview to promote Luther Strange in Alabama's Senate primary.
We have 52 senators. So you lose two, you're out. When I ran, I was told I'd have a bill on my desk. I'd sign it day one. And what McCain has done...
Oh, man.
Is a tremendous slap in the face of the Republican Party. That's the only reason we don't have, because of John McCain.
So Mike, you have a man
who is
struggling for his life, may not have much longer, and you have a president of the United States.
It's not okay.
That is using him as a punchline. Like, that's Ann Coulter material, who came on this show after Ted Kennedy died and made
And we haven't seen her since.
Right, made a snarly, nasty comment about a deceased man.
Not our choice.
And this guy, though, is president of the United States, and he is attacking John McCain, who is fighting for his very life. In a terrible, terrible struggle right now.
John McCain...
Using him as a punchline in a political speech.
John McCain, even with the state of his health today, at this very moment, is and always has been a much stronger person than the President of the United States. And the fact that the President chooses to attack him and blame the health care debacle strictly on John McCain is another indication this president has very little grasp on the details of both the presidency and the individual bills that he encounters during the course of each and every day.
Very little.
He has no idea what's in this health bill.
Very little grasp.
I don't think he cares.
And actually no humanity. I mean, you have no humanity. If you have a man who's dying and you're using him for political punchlines on talk radio and also in audiences in Alabama. And by the way, for people watching at home, if you're in an audience and John McCain's getting attacked and he's fighting life, all right, unless you were raised in a barn, keep your mouth shut, all right? Show a little respect. Show a little dignity. Show a little class.
Go ahead.
Well, it shows the extent of the nature of the party now, that that's not what happens when John McCain gets mentioned at rallies by the president and his supporters.
They boo.
Yeah.
Who raised them? Who raised these people? Because I guarantee you, I was raised in the same region, in the same socioeconomic background, going to the same Southern Baptist churches, going to the same public schools, going to the same public colleges, state schools, that these people went to. So why ask? Who raised these people? Who have they become that they would boo a man who is fighting for his very life?
And has served the country for and a decade.
Oh, pick me, pick me, pick me. I got the answer. I know. It's because of people like you, Joe. It's because of a toxic Republicanism that started with Ronald Reagan. And proceeded with virulent fury through Newt Gingrich and his Contract on America. But it was Reagan and Philadelphia, Mississippi, and Reagan and welfare queens. And it was George H.W. Bush and the Willie Horton ad. And yeah, it was Joe Scarborough, who marched long, lockstep along with all those other wild-eyed Republican radicals in the House of Representatives in the 90s, obsessed with getting a peek at the cleanest. It was all those Republicans who made a big deal out of a consensual sex act that was none of their goddamn business to begin with. I apparently took the right classes, and Joe Scarborough took the wrong ones. Somebody told him that America was a better place divided than it was unified. But he's right, to one extent. There in Huntsville, Donald Trump had the assembled faithful, and these were arguably strange people, not acolytes of Roy Tola Moore, even. These are just good old Alabama rock-ribbed Republicans, such as they are. And there they were, booing John McCain, like it was a bad call at an Auburn or an Alabama game. And yeah, they are a mess. They are nasty. That's why I came up with that acronym, MAGOTS. Make America Great Again, Trumpenzi, scum. Because they're scum. They're irredeemable. They're Nazis and skinheads and Klansmen and concerned white citizens. They're the ideological children and grandchildren of George C. Wallace. And they are, to an extent, a remnant of an old Alabama and an old South that has somehow managed to become resurgent over what once was a South with some hopes, some leanings. I know you think I'm crazy, but I'm not. Toward progressive policies. I go back to what I told you before about that photograph of FDR in my hometown in the 1930s in an open-topped car when people were on the sidewalks 10 and 12 deep just to get a glimpse of the man who had saved their lives. And they were hanging out windows and standing on rooftops to see the man who made it possible for them to actually eat 3 meals a day. And yeah, Some of them went away, peeled off in the civil rights era. Maybe a lot of them did. It's a 5-3 registration gap between Democrats and Republicans right now. But you know what? There are states with broader Democrat to Republican gaps. But Joe Scarborough's confused. He doesn't understand how it got that way. Well, there are none so blind as those who will not see. You want to know how it got that way, Joe Scarborough? Look in the damn mirror. And look at your other fellow Republicans that you have so eagerly supported over the years. Look at Newt, who said that we have to manipulate the language. Who says you call it the Democrat Party, not the Democratic Party, because you want to emphasize the rat. Look at them. Look at that. But he knows how toxic, I mean, I give him credit for recognizing how toxic his home state has become. It was nice to see my home state again for a few days back in August. And I will forever be grateful to the Horn Family Community Congregation and particularly to our buddy Scott for helping to make that happen. But it was also exceedingly frustrating because Alabama is a poverty-ridden state. There are places of undeniable beauty. Most of it's natural beauty. And then when it comes to the man-made stuff, most of that are places of almost unsurpassed in the United States grinding poverty. I told you the hookworm story. Well, there's a good point of departure between Doug Jones and Roy Tolamore. Ask the two of those what we do about hookworms in majority African American communities and counties in Alabama, and you'll get two very different answers. Doug Jones will tell you that we need government intervention to make lives better. Roy Tolamore will tell them to pray the hookworms away, and that they probably wouldn't have the hookworms if they weren't out there a supporting of the gay homosexual marriage. And if there wasn't no Muslims in our Congress and if we prayed to God every 15 seconds. You know what? A person with hookworms might rather be cured of the hookworms than be told to pray the worms away. Just guessing. Now, how do you get them to the polls? And therein lies the rub. Doug Jones is not going to be able to do that by himself. Doug Jones can't do that with $250,000. I like spectacle. I do. And I indulged in a little fantasy today of the blood draining out of the faces of various and sundry Republicans if Roy Moore could be defeated in Alabama. As things stand, I want to be absolutely clear, he will not defeat Roy Moore as things stand. All people have to do is stand around and talk about how Roy Moore is now going to be the senator from Alabama. And I was guilty early on when I said that Doug Jones is a sacrificial lamb, but at least he's on the ballot. Well, that was before the Republican nominee became the Republican nominee with 7.7% of the registered voters in Alabama. And if he becomes the junior senator from Alabama with 10% of the registered voters from Alabama, I am going to say I told you so. And I am going and I'm going to damn the Democratic Party six different ways from Sunday. Because the Democratic Party will damned well deserve it. From where I stand, an argument can be made that the Democrats have been handed a seat in the Deep South on a silver platter. And if they turn their nose up at it, it's on them. It ain't on anybody else but them. And if the Purity Patrol declares that he's not sufficiently ideologically pure, well then fuck them to death with a white hot poker. And if the centrists say, well, you know, we've got to save our resources, you've got a whole goddamn year to fundraise for the 2018 cycle, baby. Take this moment while the moment is at hand. Strike while the iron is hot. So I'm pretty, you know, it's no, there's no such thing as a sure thing. But that applies to Roy Tola Moore as well as it does to Doug Jones. I don't have the reach. I mean, I tweeted something earlier today. At Bernie, at Bernie and at Hillary. Get down to Alabama. This opportunity's not going to come twice. But that's just little old me. It needs a massive infusion of energy. It needs to be picked up and run with. And you know what? If Hillary says she can't appear on the same stage as Bernie and Bernie says he can't appear on the same stage as Hillary, fuck them both. Hard. What we are talking about here in this race is an actual madman. This is a guy, understand, I mean, this isn't just politics as usual. We're talking about Roy Moore. In Roy Moore, we're talking about a man who makes Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Steve Cantaloupe's King look sane. This guy will be the worst thing to enter the United States Senate, Jesus, jumping Christ, or any Senate, since Caligula brought Incitatus in, a horse. Maybe even worse, because Roy Tola Moore is just half a horse. He's a horse's ass. There is an opportunity here. God, God, what a pity to let it go. And of course, there was some schadenfreude. All of this came last night with a side of schadenfreude. As Marcus Aurelius ran shrieking for his phone to start deleting tweets. You can delete a tweet. If I catch myself in the middle of I try really carefully not to make typos in my tweets. I'm just obsessive compulsive that way. So, I'll delete a tweet and I'll fix the spelling and I'll put the tweet back.
Oh, you are just a little ray of sunshine, Arthur. Now, Bob, here at the Democratic Party, we're committed to being as ineffectual as possible. That's what pragmatism is all about. I hope you're wrong. I hope you're wrong, but I wouldn't take bets against you. But I can hope. But yeah, I'll delete a tweet and fix the spelling and put it back. But that is not, no. That's not what the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini was doing. As quick as he could, he got to his Twitter account and started deleting, for all he was worth, his endorsements of Luther Strange. And word coming out of the White House is that Tangerine Tiberius is pissed. And he's running around muttering imprecations and recriminations and talking about how they made me, Mitch McConnell made me endorse Luther Strange. I knew all along he was low energy. Well, the other part of it was that he despised Roy Moore, too. Because Roy Moore wasn't particularly kind to the pumpkin potentate. And guess what? We've talked about how tweets are presidential records. Well, the Presidential Records Act says you're not supposed to go out there destroying presidential records. The presidential records are to be preserved. That's why they're called records. That's why they're called presidential records. You can make, granted, I know all the caveats about this Congress. You can make a pretty cogent argument that the deliberate deleting of his tweets constitutes an impeachable offense because it's a violation of the goddamn law. It's either a high crime or a misdemeanor. It's one or the other. Could be both. It is not neither. And so he's really, really hot about having been hung out to dry in Alabama. And what pisses him off more than anything else is the fact that he got his ass handed to him by Steve Bannon. CNN had the report saying that he's out there blaming everything on Mitch McConnell. And that he feels like he's been outdone by Bannon. This, of course, will piss him off at John Kelly, whom he has already screamed at and carried on at in such a way as to make John Kelly say, in all my years in the Marine Corps, I've never been spoken to like that. He's a dumpster fire. Without a doubt. Let's see. What did he delete? Luther Strange has been shooting up in the Alabama polls since my endorsement. Finish the job. Vote for Big Luther. Alabama, get out and vote for Luther Strange. He's proven to me that he will never let you down, MAGA. And, of course, the best part of it all was his endorsement, immediate endorsement of Roy Tola Moore, telling people to win in November. I immediately responded and said, yes, absolutely. All the little Republicans in Alabama, go out and vote for Roy Moore in November, while everybody else actually goes and votes in the real election that's in December. And that one gets deleted and replaced with win in December. I mean, the space of time was like a couple or 3 minutes. Wasn't long at all. So that's, you know, just some things to think about, and we've got a whole bunch of other stuff coming up in the second half of the program. I want to thank very kindly. I want to thank our buddy Glenn for getting us started this evening. What was that number? $457.10. $457.10. Oh, well, it's now $447.10. Or if it was $447.10, it's $437.10. That's what it was. Yeah, $447.10. So now it's $437.10. But I said that we'd eat the seven. So $435 to go for tonight. Not for the rest of the week. That's for tonight. That's because of the hole we're in from Monday, Tuesday, and last Friday. Can we get there? I don't know. So, we'll take a break. See what's on your mind. I've got a... I got a few things more on mine. If you want to participate in the program, you're welcome to 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. Or from Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn. It's that easy. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. If you've never called the program before, let me encourage you to, as long as you're not a godforsaken wingnut. You're welcome to call the program, and you will find that it is terribly, terribly easy to do. And you'll enjoy the conversation, and you'll go, gosh, I never knew calling a radio show could be that easy. Well, it can be when you're calling the horn. So with all of that having been said, yeah, let's take a break. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Well, I moved into this room, if you could call it that, a week ago. I never do what I'm supposed to do. Hardly even know my name anymore. When no one calls it out, kind of vanishes away. And I can't get to sleep at night. The parking lot's so loud and bright. The AC hasn't worked in 20 years. Probably never made a single person. I can't say the same for me. I've done it many times. Somebody take me home through those Alabama pines. You can't drive through Talladega on a weekend in October. Just head up north to Jacksonville, cut around and over, watch your speedboat spring. They ain't got a thing to do, they'll get you every time. Somebody take me home through those Alabama pines. Somebody take me home through those Alabama pines. Oh. Stop and wait. It's the only open liquor store north. And I can't stand the pain of being by myself without a little help on a Sunday afternoon. Well, I needed that damn woman like a dream needs gasoline. And I tried to be some angel kind of man, one that's never seen the beauty in the world. But I tried to chase it down, tried to make the whole thing mine. Somebody take me home through those Alabama pines. Somebody take me home through those Alabama pines. Oh. Thank you. even need a name anymore. When no one calls it out, it kind of vanishes away. No one gives a damn about the things I give a damn about. The liberties that we can't do without seem to disappear like ghosts in the air. We don't even care, it vanishes away.
Gives me chills. Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit. The album, Here We Rest, the song, Alabama Pines. It is, we are right smack dab at the halfway point in this prayer meeting Wednesday. I just sort of took the whole prayer meeting Wednesday shtick as read. Because it did that just, I'm sorry, that article, that issue seems, well, it seemed like it took a little bit of precedent. That is not, however, to say that there aren't right-wing issues out there, right-wing religion industry issues out there deserving of our attention. But still, there's more, oddly enough, there was Joe Scarborough talking about being a product of the public schools. For some reason or another, I've had a collection of school teacher stories lately, and I thought we might go into them. Let's start just to the west of Alabama, shall we? Over in Mississippi Stan, where Cammy Rone, R-O-N-E, was a teacher at the Batesville Intermediate School in Batesville, and pretty sure it's not Batesville, it's Batesville, Mississippi. And she, Facebook is proving to be the doom of wingnuts and whatnot. She took to Facebook, as wingnuts will, and she posted something not particularly nice. Okay, she posted something that was, come on, it's Mississippi. It was downright racist. On her Facebook page, Cammy Rone, who was in charge of teaching little children, said, "If blacks in this country are so offended no one is forcing them here, why don't they pack up and move back to Africa where they will have to work for a living? The American government would gladly pay for it." That's right. Cammy Rone, Batesville, Mississippi school teacher, was making a discredited argument from 1859. And when teachers saw it, or when parents saw it and complained, she said, "Oh my goodness me, my stars and garters, my Facebook account has been hacked." Nobody bought it, though, because other parents had previous problems with her, you know, being a racist in her classroom. So the good part of the story is that the authorities there in the South Panola, Mississippi school district fired her ass. Amazing. They didn't give her a medal or anything, or say that her comments were taken out of context. No, they canned her. The next teacher, however, was merely suspended. This comes from Oak Pointe, P-O-I-N-T-E, Oak Pointe Elementary School in Irmo, I-R-M-O, South Carolina, Stan. You know, teaching is probably one of the... there's no probably about it. Teaching is one of the most difficult professions there is. I mean, there are things where you have to lift heavier weights. There are things where maybe you have to work longer hours. There are occupations where you sweat more. But minute for minute, day by day, week for week, year for year, there's no doubt that teaching is one of the most difficult professions one can choose to make, of which one can choose to make one's life. And so it was, and so it is, that teachers are constantly trying to come up with new ways to make education, to convey the information they want children to learn. And so it was that a teacher in Irmo, South Carolina, in like a third or fourth grade class, a teacher by the name of Kerry Roberts, K-E-R-R-I, it's fifth grade, I'm sorry, fifth grade. I forgot when you were 10 years old, fifth grade. Kerry Roberts asked her fifth graders to do a little thought experiment. And she gave them a homework assignment to take home and bring back, you know, because you too much. Some of the stuff you just can't get done in class. There's some damn teaching that has to go on. And so the homework assignment said, "You are there. You are a member of the KKK. Why do you think your treatment of African Americans is justified?" I'll just take it. I forgot the hockey puck warning, didn't I? Sorry. "You are a member of the KKK. Why do you think your treatment of African Americans is justified?" In other words, asking little children, little fifth graders, African American children, little Caucasian children, little Hispanic children, maybe some little Asian children, who knows? The whole fifth grade class there of Ms. Kerry Roberts, asking them to put themselves in the shoes of a Klansman. Now, I understand this kind of role play can be beneficial, but not this kind of role play. How could you add? I don't know what the unit was. This has got to be some kind of social studies, I'm guessing. But is there another way to write the question? Because I'm pretty sure this isn't coming from some sort of standardized textbook. How about you're an African American? Why does the KKK want to deprive you of your rights under the Constitution of the United States? If it's absolutely necessary to ask a KKK question, maybe that instead of "you're a member of the KKK, why do you think your treatment of African Americans is justified?" Wow. So she's on administrative leave for the time being. The KKK, the Knight Riders, are a horrifying and horrible part of American history. You don't not teach about them. If you don't teach about them, then there's a greater likelihood that you get them again somewhere down the road. And there's no again. Hell, they elected a president in 2016. And then good liberal blue Portland, Oregon. Roosevelt High School, where a student discovered a sticker of a robed and hooded Klansman pointing its finger toward the viewer saying, "The KKK wants you." I guess it's a recruiting sticker. It was in the restroom. Principal, Roosevelt High School Principal Philip Hristic, said there would be an investigation, and he said, "This hateful image is appalling and offensive and has no place at Roosevelt High School or at any other Portland public school." Makes you wonder if Ms. Roberts has been to Portland. But that's enough of Oregon. Let's run back over to South Carolina, where a former teacher in the school system there, by the name of Winston McEwen, who has been canned from two separate schools because he's a racist, sent a letter to the editor of the newspaper in South Carolina, the one that's called The State, and lo and behold, that newspaper published it. Yeah. The purpose of his letter was to demand that the public schools of South Carolina teach what he refers to as the truth about the virtues of slavery. And he refers to John C. Calhoun, calls him the spiritual founding father of the Confederacy. He was dead by the time the Civil War came around. He's the one that Andrew Jackson threatened to hang from the nearest tree if he kept talking about secession. And in his letter, this former teacher of young minds in South Carolina asked, "Was Calhoun right or wrong when he argued from the 1830s until his death in 1850 that the South's Christian slavery was a positive good and a great good for both whites and blacks?" Christian slavery. Yes, because it was. It really, really was Christian slavery. This is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, so I'll remind you that preachers and pastors and ministers and priests and gospel sharps of all sort, all through the South, preached that slavery was ordained by God, and they used the letters of St. Paul to back it up, in particular, one of his letters, a verse of which says, "Slaves, obey your masters as the church obeys Christ." If Calhoun was wrong, Winston McEwen, former teacher, full-time racist, wrote, then there may be grounds for removing monuments and flags. But if Calhoun was right, the monuments and flags should stay and be multiplied. Blacks should be freed from oppressive racial integration so they can show the world how much they can do without white folk. The southern states should seize their freedom and independence, and the north should beg the south's pardon for the war. Whoa. There you go. They canned him from a Catholic teaching at a Catholic school in 1999 when he wouldn't take down a Confederate flag in his classroom. But he's a big fan of John C. Calhoun. A little moment here. The Clemson University football team is enjoying some considerable success. And, of course, that university is on the grounds, and it is a fully integrated university, and people pack into their stadium on football Saturdays to lustily cheer for the Clemson University Tigers, who are running up and down the field on John Calhoun's old dirt as free people of color, smack dab on his plantation. charming, isn't it? Goddess of irony, she don't sleep. And then, of course, there was the story yesterday of the substitute teacher in Charlotte, Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, who screamed at one of his students to quit speaking Spanish, and if he wanted to speak Spanish, to go back to where they speak Spanish. I know. And I'm sure this would be equally confusing to Joe Scarborough, too. So it's about a quarter till. Let's run over and check in with our buddy Thomas from FYINation.com. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, Bob. I am kind of infuriated with what you were talking about. Why you've been talking about, but the subject matter, because my godmother was a Union Chicago teacher.
Okay.
And the behavior of these so-called teachers is just absolutely sickening. And back when I was a young dumbass Republican, we would argue back and forth, and she'd argue about equality, and she'd argue with me about why Rush Limbaugh was an idiot. Even though, as she was doing this, this is how wonderful this woman was. She would let, when I visited, she would let me listen to Rush Limbaugh and impermeate her house with that man while I visited. And this was a woman who embodied everything about old Democratic Union style, going on strike when a strike was called for, striking with union teachers and everything else. And these people just make me absolutely sick, as they should everyone listening.
Well, I guess she was just kind of waiting and thinking that you would... you'd grow out of it, or at least hoping.
Well, I hope with what I've done with my show and a couple of shows, other shows that I do here, and helping other people who want their own show on FYNation.com, because we don't charge, we just say put in the time, and, you know, yeah, you got to work with me, and that's not exactly easy. Bob, you know that.
Are you kidding? You're a little ray of sunshine to work with.
Quit lying. It is prayer meeting Wednesday. Come on. God's going to, like, smite you or something.
No, I get forgiven for everything I do on Wednesdays.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Yeah, you of course had the blue-haired ladies. I had the fun priests.
You see, yeah, that's where, you know, the mean, I was lucky as a Southern Baptist. I didn't have mean nuns. I had sweet little blue-haired ladies who could cook like, yeah. Oh my God, they could cook, and they told you sweet little stories about how much Jesus loves everybody. And then you go upstairs and they give you the real skinny.
It's kind of like the levels of Scientology. Don't sue me, I have nothing. And if you stalk me, you're going to get real bored. I go to like 3 places.
Yeah, it's a whole lot of sitting around, right?
Yeah, pretty much. But I just... When I see teachers being... Especially public school teachers. The ones who buy their own students their...
Who spend out of their own pockets, out of a salary that ain't much in the first place... to provide the materials necessary for the children to learn, which the state or the school district should be providing.
Thank
anyway.
You.
Yeah, I mean, I recognize what a damnably difficult profession it is. And then you get these, and yeah. I mean, of course, not all teachers. See, we have to say not all, but anytime we've got a story about a person from a profession, you have to say not all.
Yeah.
It's like the dickhead asshole in Pennsylvania who just had to resign his post as fire chief in his Pennsylvania township. He got mad at the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. See, you got to say Steelers, not Steelers. Steelers. If you want to get all Western Pennsylvania about it, they're the Steelers, and you shop at Giant Eagle. But anyway, so he was from some little township in Pennsylvania, and when the Pittsburgh Steelers didn't come out of the tunnel and participate in the national anthem in their game against, what, the Bears? I forget. Yeah.
You're looking at the wrong person.
Whatever. But anyway, they stayed in the tunnel because the head coach Mike Tomlin said, we're going to be a unified football team. And we're not going to stand and we're not going to kneel. We're just going to stay in the tunnel. And one of the, you know, there's always somebody. One of the Steelers had to come out and stand at the mouth of the tunnel and put his hand over his heart, you know, because, of course, he was some sort of veteran of our misadventures in the Middle East and Central Asia. But anyway, the firefighter got all pissed off. And as a result, and there it is again, social media. Paul Smith, who was chief of the volunteer fire department in Cecil Township, Pennsylvania, couldn't stop himself. He ran over to Facebook and said that Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin, quote, just added himself to the list of no good, you know, that word with an R and an N and E and I, two G's.
And oh, yeah, that word.
Yeah, the one that's not ginger. That he was a no good.
Yeah.
And then he said, and then, yes, I said it. Wrong accent, but, you know, it's Pennsylvania, which is.
It could be the right accent.
Well, Pittsburgh in the West, and Pennsylvania and Philly in the East, and Alabama in the middle. But it caused a real firestorm, and then he resigned last night. And of course, because he's a snowflake, he then blamed the media for telling everybody what he'd said. I'm not the racist the media portrays me as. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And he said he regretted his comment, but he's not a racist. You know, he just uses that word. I mean, just because you use that word doesn't mean you're a racist. Yes, it does. If you're white. Yeah, it does.
If I ever use that word, my mother would slap me across the face. My mother is not a violent woman. My mother sings in choir. My mother
slap the taste right out of your mouth.
She's only ever hit me once and was on the backside with a hairbrush. I don't remember what I did, but I must have done something. I don't even think she remembers, but I remember. My father, one time I said the F word in front of my mother and he kicked me literally in the ass and said, don't you ever do that again to your mother.
But this, you know, for some reason or another, this thing is driving the national anthem thing is driving people crazy. Sparky just sent me a picture of a guy. Do you know what a banana hammock is, Thomas?
Yeah, I do. I've fallen out of one.
No, I don't. I hope you've never worn one.
It's a
swimsuit that provides it's kind of like got shoulder straps and it's got a little place for the package, the equipment to go. And then it kind of goes up the crack of your, and then it goes up to the shoulders.
Good wearing that. I thought you were talking about the hammock that you sleep in.
No. It's called a banana hammock.
Okay. I was thinking of a vagina boat. Sorry. Wrong story.
No. Okay. Well, another day. So Sparky just sent me this photograph of a guy wearing a hat with an American flag band wrapped around it, wearing an American flag banana hammock, and an American flag for a cape. And it simply says, Trump supporter, disrespecting the American flag is the worst thing a person can do. Also, Trump supporter, because this guy is a maggot. He's one of the maggots.
Yes, and thank you for that word, because I have begun borrowing one more of your work.
Use it. Knock yourself out. So it's driving them. It's driving them nuts. You can put. I got to thinking about it. I recall. I think it was Budweiser beer cans that had the American flag on it. That doesn't bother the maggots. Well, it's patriotic American beer that's owned by a consortium from Belgium and Brazil. What could be more American than putting the American flag on the can of beer owned by a consortium from Belgium and Brazil? Right? It was Bud. This Bud's for you. Mm-hmm. So that's okay, too. And drinking so many of them that you get shit-faced falling down drunk, and then you pee in your American flag boxer shorts, that's all right. But by God, all them people kneeling during the national anthem, that ain't gonna do. So lo and behold, now
hey Bob,
this, yeah.
If the slogan is "This Bud is for you," and you pee on your American shorts, does that mean that the full circle has arrived?
Well, you know, you don't buy beer so much as you rent it. You buy it in one place and you leave it in another. It's kind of like a U-Haul that way. But so the New England Patriots knelt last Sunday, and they were kneeling not in solidarity with Colin Kaepernick, who started kneeling as a result of all the unarmed African-American men being gunned down by the police. They were kneeling in solidarity with each other, being pissed off at Donald Trump, who had attacked the NFL. Just trying to be clear about that. So enter Steven Pena. Pina, I don't know. There's no, what do you call that thing over the N in Spanish? P-I-N-A. Well, there ain't one of those. And he, of course, had to run out to Facebook. And in a way, you know, we've kind of had this conversation. I'm glad he did. I want to know these people. I want them to fly their goddamn Confederate flags, and I want them to post their shit all over Facebook, because I want everybody to be able to know who they are and what they are. And in this particular case, Steven Pena is the a member of the Brockton, Massachusetts Parks and Recreation Commission. And he was plumb pissed off that the Patriots players knelt. And he took to, now granted he didn't go quite as far, sorta, as the guy from Cecil Township in Pennsylvania, Thomas, but he jumped on Facebook and said, "Turds, your dumbass isn't paid to think about politics. Dance, monkey, dance."
Oh, that's better.
Don't you think? So he gets called out for the racist that he is. It was not meant to be a racist comment. And if it was taken as such, that's regrettable. I've heard "dance monkey dance" on a local sports talk show I listen to on WEEI. So his justification for using a racist epithet, monkey, is that he's heard it used on the radio. Thank God he's not listening to that jackass out there in Illinois. Because he'd just have gone ahead and gone full Cecil Township and used the word. Because that guy uses it all the time.
Well, and can we go back to, since we're talking about sports and this word. You know, our friends over at Morning Joe just had their 10-year anniversary, right? And I've been meaning to mention this. And I didn't get
the invitation. I didn't even have cake.
I'm sorry you didn't, because you should have. I heard it was good, and then Mika ate it all. I'm an asshole to her. I really shouldn't be, but I am. That being said, the reason he is on the air...
Was it white cake? Never mind.
Close. The reason he is on the air is because I miss in the morning... made a comment about a basketball team, and I won't repeat the comment. You can look it up.
We all remember it was the Rutgers women's basketball team. And Imus in the Morning was on MSNBC, and he got canned because of, we'll go ahead and say it, the nappy-headed hose comment. And there was sort of a talent search for somebody to hold down that morning drive MSNBC slot. And lo and behold, what started out as Scarborough Country morphed into Morning Joe. Yes.
Yeah, because at one point Stephanie Miller was even on MSNBC. And that was right before, I don't know why they decided not to go with her, whatever. Can't control that wind of change. They brought in, Morning Joe. I think it was because they thought he could book, being a former congressperson, book the...
Yeah, it was access. Sure.
Yeah, access.
And plus they wanted to have a politically diverse lineup. So, they gave the most valuable piece of broadcast real estate to the, he tries to come off as some sort of a moderate. There's nothing moderate about him.
No, absolutely.
He was a hardcore, wild-eyed, rabid, frothing at the mouth, Newt Gingrich, Contract on America reactionary.
Absolutely. And not a lot of people remember that. And during the celebration, I was thinking, y'all know why you're having 10 years to celebrate? I would be hiding this under the carpet. I would not be happy about this. I mean, great that you have, you made it, but this is not like something to be like, yippee. This is like Hannity being happy that he's in Bill O'Leary's slot again. Not a thing to be happy about because of why. You know? I mean, come on. Really? But these people have no shame. And that's why I'm not saying we're better than, well, I am saying we're better than them. We're better than them.
I think you can say that, yes.
We do this because of the love of it, not because of the profit of it. And that's where I want to leave you, and hopefully somebody else will call in and donate, because if I ever get my credit cards paid off, 29%
interest. It comes from a really sweet place. I understand and thank you. For some reason or another, it's just been a really tough month. It's been a tough couple of months. And
you, I want to tell the audience, when I was in need, you helped me out, and you didn't have to. So I want to remind anybody who does $25 or more, I will give, if you let me know, doubtingtom@fynation.com, still waiting for that hate mail, especially when I talk about Jill Stein on my show.
I'm waiting for her to announce that she's going to run for Senate in Alabama. Never mind.
Feel free to send me that hate mail. I'm actually going to defend her tonight. That should be kind of interesting.
I don't drink anymore, so I can't listen to that.
Because
that would be a full-on liter of bad tequila kind of night.
I know, right? But that being said, I might start for you because I got a full-on bar in my basement. Has some pretty good stuff, I'm told.
Well, so I'd have to be pretty solidly liquored up to defend Jill Effingstein.
Yeah, well, that being, I don't want to upset anybody, but that being said, when it's a valid point, it's a valid point, and I go by what's factual as opposed to running off at the mouth. I know most people think I run off at the mouth all the time, but I try to go by what's factual, even if I mispronounce a lot of words. But the point is, if you either are a sustaining subscriber to us and say you won't have to go to Bob's show or any of our shows that are on FY Nation, like Tara Buster, if you haven't checked Tara out at 7, I am not in it at all, except...
I gotta get Tara on the program. You just reminded me. We gotta have a conversation, her and me.
She is the most awesomest. Bob, I gotta talk to her tomorrow. I will let her know that you want her on.
Yeah, just tell her I didn't forget. I'm just a doofus.
No, I will. I will. She knows I'm a I'm a bigger doofus, so don't worry about it. She knows the class A doofus. I'm like the supersized doofus, so don't worry about it. I will. I will do that for you tomorrow, since I can't contribute. But those who contribute, we like socialism. So just let me know, and I will forward half of the subscription to whatever show that you like, so they can get some of it with us.
Okay, well, thank you, Thomas. Thank you very, very kindly.
That way, at least we can help, and I don't have to pay 29% on my credit card if it ever gets paid off.
Ow! That hurts just thinking about it.
It was a good idea at the time, Bob.
Well, they all are, and sometimes that involves that bottle of tequila, and it's amazing what happens when the tequila's gone.
I know, right?
Yep. All right, Thomas, you have yourself a wonderful evening. Have a good show. And, you know, if you have to go and shower in bleach after defending Jill Effingstein, you know, that's just a bleach shower you got to take.
Yeah, indeed. I love all liberals, what can I say? Even the naughty ones. And there are a lot of naughty ones.
Did you say naughty or nutty?
Well, both.
Okay. See you, Thomas. Our buddy Thomas calling from FYINation.com. Note coming from Robert in Australia. The national anthem in Australia. In Australia, we don't play the national anthem at sporting events. We don't swear allegiance to a flag or anything else. Unless you're a migrant who becomes a citizen, you have to swear allegiance and then you get a wattle plant. This here's the wattle. It's the emblem of our land. You can stick it in a bottle. You can hold it in your hand. That's the sum total that I know about the wattle, courtesy of Monty Python. The national anthem to 1974 was God Save the Queen. Robert notes, boring! In 1974, it was replaced with Advance Australia Fair. As an equally boring song that had to have its opening line, Australia's sons, let us rejoice, to Australians all, let us rejoice, before it had to have it changed before it could make the cut. No Australian, at least none that I know the words and music to either of those dull, sleep-inducing ballads. We kind of find all that stuff a bit silly, to be honest. And the best proof of that, thank you, Robert, the best proof of that that I can recall, when was the Rugby World Cup a few years back? I remember getting up to watch, what was it, the United States playing Ireland or something? And, of course, there was the playing of the requisite national anthems. And I'd watched a couple of other matches, too. And the only thing that really mattered was the haka when the New Zealand squad played. They'd play the Marseillaise for France, and the French rugby players were kind of looking around, stretching, you know, whatnot. And they'd play the national anthem of Ireland, and, you know, the Irish are standing there just sort of stretching, scratching themselves, you know, making sure that everything's properly adjusted. And they played the United States national anthem, and out of everybody, there's the United States rugby team standing there, hand over the heart. You know, the rest of the world doesn't militarize its sporting events. And the best thing that could possibly happen would be if we stopped playing the national anthem at sporting events, if we stopped praying at sporting events, introduce the teams, introduce the starting lineups, blow the damn whistle, kick the ball, throw the pitch, and get going. Nobody buys a ticket to hear somebody yodel the national anthem. But of course, that's what non-fascist countries do. This is a fascist country. And it's had fascist overtones for a very long time. And it was not brought on by Dolt 45. The militarization
of sporting events is sort of a classic fascist tactic. And wasting all that aviation fuel, flying all those jets over all those stadiums. The purpose of that is to make you think about the military while you're watching the sporting event. Because I guess the argument is, especially with something like football, that football is a form of ritualized warfare. What did George Carlin say one time? That football was basically America in an encapsulated form. He said, first down Pennsylvania, Midwest to go. And like many of the things that George Carlin said, there's an element of truth in it. Okay, so 2015, won by the Kiwis, last Rugby World Cup. Thank you, Marty. That must have been when I got up to... Yeah. But there's a reason for all of this, and there's a reason that Trump is losing what little bit of mind he has that it hasn't been hollowed out by the spirochetes. There's a reason. Because the fetishization of the military goes hand in hand with a military that goes out on global worldwide adventures in defense of things like the petrochemical hydrocarbon industry. courtesy of Earther, Lib Talker despises the national anthem. We don't know if he's still eating babies. I don't despise it. It just has a place. You want to play the national anthem when somebody's graduating from boot camp? Groovy, play it. You want to play it before somebody gets inaugurated or a high school graduation or whatever, fine. But it's actually cheapened by playing it every time you turn around. And all those people honoring the national anthem, I've been to a lot of sporting events. I've been to a couple of NASCAR events, but one recently, last couple of years. When they played the national anthem and all of those Confederate flags were flying in the infield down there in Darlington, South Carolina, there was an absolute mob of people lined up on the concourse getting their beers, their $10 Bud Lights, getting it in an American flag can, of course, getting their beers and their Bojangles chicken tenders and their French fries and chili fries and hot dogs and chili dogs and whatnot. They were not, and you know what? They did not snap to attention when they were standing there in line waiting to get their goodies. And the person selling the hot dogs and chili dogs did not stop and get ramrod straight and put his hand over his heart for the playing of the national anthem. Because you know what, baby? There was some commerce going on. And you know what? Participating in capitalist commerce is always acceptable, is always an acceptable replacement for actually honoring the flag and standing at attention for the national anthem. Just sort of, saying. I don't know. Robert in Australia asks, wasn't the whole playing the national anthem at sporting events thing in the USA started during World War II to promote patriotism? Robert notes, World War II is over. You can stop now. I don't know. Maybe it was. That's something for the Horn Research Department to go to work on. A question coming in from Brother Deacon Asa. Hey, by the way, who pays for those goddamn Air Force jets to fly over the football stadiums? We do. I doubt the billionaire oligarch team owners are willing to front the cabbage for that their affair. That would take away from the private jet gas money. Well, no, we do. We do. We so do. We get stuck for it all. It's kind of the way I get a little bit perturbed when I pull into the Rippy Mart. And, this isn't me being anti-cop. Not all cops! Well, in this case, all cops. It's a regulation.
it chaps my ass a little bit when I pull into the Rippy Mart and there's a roller there, a cruiser. And it'll be high summer and all the and you know, the windows rolled up and everything, but it's unlocked and the engine's running and the air conditioning's going full force, and you know, the deputy's in there getting himself an ice cold Coke or Cola and maybe a box of Krispy Kremes. Maybe that's petty. But climate change is real. One of these days we'll have police cruisers that are electric police cruisers. I know. No, we won't. It just doesn't have the horsepower, Bob. Just don't have the horsepower. Let's see. Oh, thank you. Thank you to Charlene. Thank you very, very kindly. We're down about to cross the $400 mark. Between Charlene and Glenn this evening, we are at $405 to go. So, making progress. Be nice to get down on, maybe, get. Could we get down to $300 so tomorrow it's only $500? That would be extremely helpful. Just trying to keep all this on the air because there are bills to pay, and I'd like to pay them before I leave for D.C. Okay, Steve from Georgia Stan tells me it became mandatory for the NFL back in 2009. Congress threw a gob of cash at the NFL so that they would promote patriotism. Yeah, that's one of those. That's one of those business private sector partnerships. Yeah. And if you're a member of Congress, how the hell do you vote against that? Mm-hmm. Okay, let's run over and check in real quick with our buddy Jim. Hey, Jim.
Good evening. How you doing, sir?
You know, 43 minutes left in the program, and I don't know where it went, Jim.
Does time fly when you're having fun?
Oh, sometimes they just zoom by.
Yeah, speaking of those fly paths, I would dare say that USAREC, or United States Army Recruiting Command, and the recruiting commands of other services chip in a little bit for that, because it's a great retention grant tool.
Oh, yeah. It's
a great way to induce other people, or younger men and women, to go into the armed services. That's the reason they do that.
Right, because it's impressive as hell.
Oh, it is. Beautiful. It really is. And, you know, I think when the French did it for Bastille Day, and the British have done that too, and they have the different colors and stuff like that. It is magnificent, and it is definitely a patriotic symbol, and it costs a lot of money, but, you know, there it is, and there you have it.
Yeah.
I mean, they have spent money on worse things, that's for damn sure.
I'm thinking in particular of the ad where the Marine turns into a knight that goes and sticks a sword in a dragon's eye. Remember that ad?
Mm-hmm. I do.
And you know, I'm pretty sure that's not what it's like in Kandahar.
No, that's not what it's like in Kandahar. Not at all. No, not at all. But can we change the subject to a happier note, so to speak, a different thing?
Does it involve chaps, Jim?
No. Well, it could if that were your predilection.
Aquarium pump powered 5-foot-long bong with stirrups.
No, I was.
I could use one of those about now.
Well, I wish I had that old bong. I don't know what happened to it. I think it got put away.
If somebody could find that damn thing needs to be in the Smithsonian, Jim.
Well, you know, I wish it could, but I'd probably be in somewhere else besides the Smithsonian. I'd probably be in St. Elizabeth or in some prison somewhere. Who knows?
Well, you know, how many years ago was that?
75, 76.
Do you realize how much more potent cannabis is now?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, they got some. I have friends who work on marijuana farms in Northern California.
If you had that device and you loaded it up with some of the modern stuff You would be on a trajectory bound for the sun.
Bob, I've been there. Because I remember, I had been there, and I remember one time this guy came over to my house, and he had, he didn't say anything about it, but he had soaked this stuff that he had with Placidil. One of those big sleeping pills.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I took a couple of hits off that, and a friend of mine was there with me, and then he came in. This guy just smoked it like it was nothing. And when I got up to get out of the chair, I couldn't get up. I had to get on my knees to get into the bedroom.
Where's my legs? I can't feel my legs.
It was... I told him, I said, what in the hell did you put on that stuff besides Paraquat? And he said, oh, I forgot to tell you, I just put some Placidil on it. And I said, oh, shit, Placidil, my God. And my mother used to take those pills sometimes, and she would slip me one or two, you know, because I was, at that time, I was working pretty hard. I was doing a lot of things and trying to party and stuff like that. So, you know, they were quite... efficacious in their effect. They would knock your ass out. As a matter of fact, if you took one, you better have one foot in the bed and the other off the bed, and you can roll over. That's about it. And you'd be in the same position you were the next morning. But what I wanted to ask you is, you know, Halloween's coming up.
Yes.
Have you planned your costume, sir?
There has been some talk, and I don't know how I feel about it, but there was a rumor that somewhere around Halloween, one of the drive-ins around here was going to be showing, because there's a couple, one of the nearby drive-ins was going to be showing the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Now, you're not going to get into any type of Frederick's Hollywood outfit, are you?
No, I was thinking maybe Riff Raff.
Oh, well, he had a he had.
There's not much to. I'm too old to do Brad.
Well, you told me one time that you went as
I did one
Dr.
time.
Frankenfurt.
I did yeah. one time. I absolutely mm-hmm. did. And you know it was great fun. But you know what? There's not a lot of costume there, and it gets kind of cold at the end of October.
Sure it does. I had this friend, he was from Manchester, he was the Rare Books Librarian, and he's now the Rare Books Librarian in America. This guy was a marvel with a sewing machine, and he did up this entire papal costume. I mean, it looked just like, well, the Pope would have worn it. It was that good. And so he asked me what I was going to do for Halloween, and I said, well, I don't know. I have a costume. He said, why don't you borrow this one that I made? And I said, okay. And so I went as Pope John Paul George Ringo IV, or the first.
That's a beautiful thing, Jim.
And I was out on the floor, this disco just dancing my ass off, and this black girl came up to me and said, you going to hell? And I had this big old cross, like it was like a Celtic cross or something, and she ripped that thing off. I could have slapped the shit out of her for doing that.
Wait a minute, in a disco at Halloween, and somebody was getting all religious crazy up in your face?
Yeah. Of course, the person who won that particular night, I don't mean to be offensive, they had wrapped this huge circular paper thing around themselves, with their legs sticking out, flesh colored, and with the big old string sticking out of it, and with the tampon, and with this toxic shock syndrome.
Oh, people. Of course. Disco culture was a different thing.
Oh yeah, it was, and I had this kind of overweight friend who went as Bambi and Gone with the Wind. And he was always going over to these boys who were candy clad. He said, now, you boys come over here. I don't check you to see if you're wet. So there it is.
Well, you know, as we get nearer to Halloween, we'll tell the. You'll have to call in, and I'll let you tell the obligatory Halloween joke, the one that that you tell so well. We'll make it a yearly thing.
Which one was that? I can't remember.
About the
right
church
now.
Halloween party.
Oh yeah. Okay. We'll just hold that one and let everyone hold their breath. There we go.
Yes. But don't want to ruin it for anybody that hasn't heard it before.
You know, going through fall holidays, of course, my birthday is in November. But, you know, even before that, I always look forward to the fall because, number one, it was Halloween, and that was always a great thing to me. It was much greater than Christmas or Thanksgiving because at Thanksgiving, you're going to have to sit around the table with people who you really don't care for, who have these crazy-ass political views. And then at Christmas, you're going to have to get together all these gifts to give to people who really don't give a shit about what you give them. They're going to take them back the next day or ask you where you got them. And, you know, I almost got to the point where I would just leave the price tag in the slip in the damn box. But Halloween was one holiday or whatever that you could really just express yourself and just have fun with no real obligation other than the idea of putting your costume together, which would bring out the child in everybody.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And, of course, I think Halloween this year falls on a Tuesday. So in all truth, I'll be going on Halloween as an obscure progressive radio host. In other words, I'll be sitting here in exactly the way I sit here. And, of course, by then the weather will be colder, so cooler at least, so I probably will no longer be doing naked radio.
Well, that's I really appreciate that, Bob. I really do. I'm glad.
The horror.
Oh, God. I'll tell you, I would love to call Trump up on Halloween and just say this to him. I am the most horrid, worst creature of all. I am the remainder of what used to be any resemblance of your conscience.
Nice. Of course, but then again, maybe this is a thing we could work on. Prank calls for Donald Trump on Halloween. Just dialing you up saying, Donald,
456-1414.
Donald, this is Bob Mueller. I just wanted to give you a little courtesy call to let you know the indictment will be out tomorrow.
Oh, there you go. I had another friend who used to call people up on Halloween, friends of mine, some of whom are no longer with us, and he would pretend that he was from the health department. And he would say, sir, this is so-and-so from the Richmond County Health Department, and you need to come in to be checked because you have been given to us as a name of the carrier of, and this, that, and the other. And I said, you know, that's just plain mean.
Yeah,
I never did go
that would,
go
yeah,
that low.
Yeah. Yeah, ma'am, is your refrigerator running, or ma'am, do you have Prince Albert in a can?
Well, yeah, I guess so, but nonetheless,
they never get old.
No, they don't. But I can remember I was working for Jackson at the time, and the phone rang. And it was a friend of mine saying, "You son of a bitch, I'm going to kill you, you motherfucking son of a bitch." I said, "Steve, what in the hell is wrong with you?" He said, "Did you call the health department and give them my name?" And I said, no, I did not. He said, "Are you sure?" He said, "I am going to find out who did this. I am going to kill them." But this guy would do that. He would do that to people who he just hated. And about that time, you had two-way calling where you could ring one number. You can't do it anymore, and you can ring another. And you would call the two people who hate each other the most. And by the time you finish dialing, if your fingers are quick enough, you get a hello, hello. And then they said, "Who is this? Why are you calling me, you son of a bitch?" And they just go nuts. And they were getting into this huge fracas on the telephone. And then a voice would come from a third party. "You people don't even really came to see each other. Why are you fighting?" there were all kinds of nasty tricks he could play on people, that's for damn sure. But it was a lot of fun. And, you know, it was just, like I say, a time of year when you could just be yourself and just have a lot of fun and not have to worry about being with people who you did not want to be with or giving presents that you couldn't afford and the people who did were the recipients who really didn't appreciate them, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so
there it is.
And so, you know, we're, what would that be? 31 plus 3, 34 days away.
Got it. Listen, what's going on in D.C. With the ACACT? Are you going to be
pounding
the halls of Congress?
We're going to be doing that again, and we're still working on a Senate introduction of the bill. But it's also going to be a matter of trying to talk to people about the nasty bit of skullduggery that was done with the National Academy of Science review of the health literature, you know, the peer-reviewed scientific literature that shows that...
Yes, I know it.
Yeah. The fact that that's been suppressed in Stalinist fashion is really... It deserves not to go away, and it deserves to be paid a little bit more attention to, because it's so easy. I mean, just doing what I do here, Jim, I can get lost. I can start a program with an idea of touching on, you know, six different issues, and by the time airtime rolls around, they've all been replaced by fresh outrages. I mean, it's not even a 24-hour news cycle anymore. So that's kind of slipped into the distance, and we're trying to shove it back onto at least a warm burner, because it should be, you know, members of the Congress who actually care should be outraged at this kind of behavior.
Well, I certainly hope you'll find some willing ears who will listen.
Well, I've got scads of meetings lined up, and we'll talk a little bit more about it maybe Friday on the front porch about how people can help with that. And I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about reaching out to senators and stuff and telling them, mm-hmm. Look, I'm from nowhere near Appalachia, but this matters to me, and I want you to raise hell about it, and I want the bill introduced in the Senate. Damn it.
Well, I hope you can. Wasn't it introduced one time before somewhere?
Oh, it's been introduced in the House repeatedly. It's a bigger chore getting it introduced in the Senate, because that collegiality bullshit. I can't tell you the number of Democrats we've talked to, and the first thing they say is, "Well, what does Senator Manchin think about it?"
And I was just thinking about him. What would he say?
Oh, he hates it. He's done everything he can to thwart it. And he sure as hell didn't issue any scathing criticisms of the suppression of the review either.
No, I'm sure.
Because the same people who own him are the ones who went crying to Ryan Zinke in the Trump administration and said, "These guys are about to say that mountaintop removal poisons people, and there's scientific proof of it. We can't have that." And so, boom. And the thing about all that is that while it was couched in terms of, well, you know, we're suspending all of these grants until there's been a thorough financial review, the only one that got suppressed. There's all kinds of other Department of Interior grants. There's all kinds of other grants in those departments that are still going forward. The only one that got stopped was the National Academy of Science review of the peer-reviewed journal literature pointing to a direct link between mountaintop removal and a public health crisis in the Sacrifice Zone. That was the only one, Jim.
I don't doubt it. You know, this new congressman, the relative of the new congressman, Evan Jenkins, that is saying?
No. Our congressman, yours and mine? Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do miss Nikki Jo Rahal. I really do. Because at least I could call there and I could get something done, whatever. This Evan Jenkins person, I wouldn't call
him. Oh, no, no, he's useless. He's useless as tits on a tank. And the thing is, the House of Representatives apparently isn't good enough for him. because what he's going to do now...
No, he wants to be senator.
He wants to be senator, and he wants to go mano a mano with Patrick Morrissey because Morrissey wants to be a senator. So that'll be an interesting primary fight. And a pox on both their houses.
I knew the staffers in Ray Hall's office here and in D.C., and I would talk to them at least once a week, and we would always have good conversations and stuff like that. And even though I couldn't get what I wanted, you know, at least it was treated with that air of civility. Not anymore. And I get these robocalls from Jenkins wanting me to participate in some kind of telephonic forum.
Yeah, telephone town hall, because he's too much of a chicken shit to actually be face-to-face with his own constituents.
And the first time I got him, I said, I'm not interested. Now, please don't call here again, because I'm not interested in this type of forum. And once a month, or once every, they've got a clock set, call Jim, I'll get these calls. And there's no way I'm going to get on the telephone with some of those nuts he's got on there. I listened to some of the people he had before they were going to put me on the line. I just did it just to see if they, what they were saying. And what these people were saying was just absolutely bug-eyed crazy.
Congressman Jenkins, could you talk a little bit about how much Jesus loves coal? Yeah.
Yeah, that's about all I can say. And then I probably have a cross burn in my yard or something like that, and I don't need that. You know, I'm just too damn old to get into it anymore. But I can remember happier days when Congressman Ray Hall was there, and the worst thing they ever did was to turn that man out of Congress. They really did, because he did have some influence and power.
Well, he did, and the shame of it all is that he wouldn't see the harm that was being done to his own constituents with this particular issue. And you know, when he lost, I mean, it was really pathetic and pitiable, because he jumped out of an airplane to prove how loyal he was to the coal industry. And it still wasn't enough. And, you know, the same thing will eventually happen to Jenkins, you know, and that's the thing. There's going to be a new congressman one way or the other. There are some Democrats lining up. There are some Republicans lining up. And I'm looking at the crop, and I'm not feeling real hopeful. I mean, you know what you're going to get out of the Republicans, but I'm not seeing a lot of Democratic contenders for that seat who inspire me to think that they've got much in the way of a new vision for West Virginia.
I don't think I can see why you're saying that. Absolutely not. I haven't really kept up with it, to tell you the truth. I've been so involved with other things, and I just can't devote the time I used to do it by, you know, calling and stuff like that.
But I mean, by the same token, lest I be a complete hypocrite, you and you know, my conversation last night with Ed Rabel, this state is not going to elect a progressive anything on a national level.
That's one of the best conversations I've heard on this network.
I think there's a way to educate toward it, but there's a lot of self-delusion going on about this state, especially by people who don't know this state.
True.
You know, you've got people thinking that somehow Joe Manchin is going to be ousted by a primary challenger. It is not going to happen. And as their basis for that, they say, well, look at what Bernie did in the primary. And you know, I was one of those people who went and voted for Bernie in the primary. And I didn't do that. And I didn't do that because, you know, there wasn't any lesser of anything going on in my vote. I fully supported Bernie Sanders. But Trump,
I did too, Bob.
But
I did
Trump
too.
Trump came here. And he had that massive, massive rally in Charleston. And he told them, don't vote for me in the primary. Go over and vote in the Democratic primary and vote for Bernie. because it was all about his grievance and his vindictiveness relative to Hillary Clinton. And so that horse whipping that Hillary took here, there are progressive people here. You know, there are people like you and me and Boss Man Wayne and Brother Deacon Gerald and other Devin, and you know, lots of people. There are progressive people in West Virginia, but they are not a majority.
No, they're not. No, just a really a very slender handful, that's for sure.
I guess you would say it's a balm to me, Jim, to hear somebody stand up on the hustings or on the stump and say, West Virginia has got to get wise to the fact that coal is not our future. That is like standing in the middle of St. Peter's Square swearing allegiance to Satan in this state. Okay?
Well, one thing, if you were to do that, or if you, you can always tell them, look, Satan's the best friend you people have ever had because he kept you in business for over 2,000 years.
Well, yes.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And there's got to be some truth telling in this state, but it's not. It's going to have to be done in a way that people here can wrap their minds about it. Around it.
Well, you've got a generation of people here who are definitely devotees of coal, and they think it's going to come back. It's not going to come back. It's just not going to. You can't convince them of that. And the best they can ever get out of it is to have the ones who've retired at least get their benefits, and the ones who have black lung and stuff like that. Now, that's fair.
And to be fair to him, I mean, I'm not a member of the fan club or anything. Joe Manchin was instrumental in getting the health care benefits preserved for retired members of the UMWA. And that alone will be enough to get him past the primaries.
Well, I'm glad he did that, because there were a lot of people who were really suffering because of that. And, you know, you can't beat that. You just can't. And, he did.
But by the same token, the one thing they didn't do, the one thing the Republicans would not allow, was the other half of that, and that was protecting their pensions. And that's still hanging out there, as far as I know.
Well, I thought that was part of his platform on that situation.
Well, it's part of the platform, but it's not part of what got done. What got done was the health care.
Well, and these companies that come and go, and they go bankrupt, and there is no pension, you know?
Right, exactly. And there are issues, and this is, you know, this is the great question for any state that has a high number of evangelicals in it, Jim.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Let me ask you a question. As I remember, in federal service, there was an agency, the Pension Guarantee, I can't remember what it was called, the Pension Guarantee Department.
Yes, yes.
For a better term.
Absolutely.
Whatever happened to them?
Oh, they still exist. And one more good default, and they're out of business.
Really?
Yeah. And the thing is, there are a lot of, and I'm not a union member, and people know this better than I do. My buddy and my colleague Rick Smith could speak to this with a lot more expertise than I can. But there are a lot of union pensions out there that are not sufficiently funded.
Mm-hmm.
And unions are scrambling to keep them solvent, because once you get kicked over into that, Jim, whatever you paid in, you're going to get back pennies on the dollar.
The Pension Guarantee people?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, hell, I think Jimmy Hoffa would probably be a better manager of pensions than some of the people in these coal companies. That's damn sure.
Well, look, I mean, the pension goes on the block the minute the bankruptcy gets filed. And they don't give a damn about it. But that's, you know, that's institutional relative to the way the bankruptcy laws are set up. The very idea, and it's happened, the very idea that a coal company can go bankrupt
steal all the workers' pensions, and then at the same time turn around and say, well, you know, we need to pay out $20 million to our executive class as retention bonuses so they won't go somewhere else. And the bankruptcy court says, what a great idea.
That's not right, Bob.
No, it's not right. But you know who we have to thank for it? I mean, I can tick off some names on my fingers here. It goes back to the 2004 Bankruptcy Reform Act.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Bob Byrd signed off on that with a smile on his face, and so did a lot of other people.
What I was going to say
a minute ago, Jim, is that anybody trying to do progressive things inside a deeply religious state is sooner or later going to run up against a wall. And for all that I said in the first hour of this program, and I meant every word of it, I also acknowledge the reality of it. I don't know why the abortion issue has the magic that it has, but it does. It is a motivational tool par excellence from a right-wing standpoint. So you can sit there and you can talk to West Virginians and you can get them nodding their heads. You can say we're letting Wall Street steal us blind, and they'll nod their heads. And you can say people deserve a fair rate of pay for a fair hour's work, and they will nod their heads. And you can say you can't raise a family on $10 an hour at 37 hours a week, and they will agree with you. And you can say everybody in this state needs to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick, and they'll agree with you. And you can say Social Security needs to be protected, and they will agree with you. And you can get agreement on all of these things, Jim.
But they'll vote the exact opposite direction.
And then somebody will say, yeah, but what about the poor little fetus?
Oh, shit.
And it all goes to hell, Jim. It all goes to hell.
Oh, I know. And I would tell this woman who is a rabid Catholic, and I would say, okay. I said, you're all upset about the fetus. I said, what the fuck are you going to do with that fetus once it is emerged? Are you going to feed it? Are you going to clothe it? Are you going to see that it gets the medical attention it needs? Are you going to, in later years, contribute to its development and education so it becomes a
citizen? No, of course not.
Instead of a weight upon society? And you would hit them with that, and they just get furious. And then they go on to all this theological bullshit that I don't believe in as far as this abortion thing is concerned.
But it's the absolute – what I'm saying to you, though, is the absolute truth. And that has been the wall that everybody runs up against, like this business of a primary challenge for Joe Manchin. She can do all of that, and then they'll say, yeah, but what about the fetuses? And it's over. Or say – yeah, but what about our rights to our guns? And I'm one of those people who acknowledge that there's a difference between guns in rural America and guns in cities. Most of the guns in cities are pistols, and they're there for killing people. Unless you're talking about Dallas or something where people just casually walk around with a goddamn AR-15 on their shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
guns in cities are for killing other people. Guns in rural areas are for lots of different reasons. So I got no problem with that part of the debate. But the problem with the debate is that it is an orthodoxy, Jim. And you know as well or better than anybody what I mean when I say it's an orthodoxy. No element of an orthodoxy can ever be challenged.
Oh, no. No, no. Not at all.
And so so if you say, well, you know, I support the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. A lot of people in this state have a safe full of great, beautiful, magnificently manufactured firearms. They got a .30-06 for deer season. They got a 12 gauge for turkey season. They got a little 22 or something for plinking at varmints and stuff. And you want to. And then they'll say, yeah, but what about handguns? And if you say, well, you know, handgun, boom, you're done, because you've challenged part of the orthodoxy.
Yeah, you're right there.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just simply sacrosanct, and you can't deal with that. And I don't know why they need or feel that they need all of these weapons.
Well, I mean, like I just explained, there are different firearms for different purposes in a rural setting.
I've never been a hunter. Okay.
I'm not worth a damn as one either, but I do. I at least understand it, and I've taken a few nice little armed walks in the woods, and you don't go turkey hunting with a .30-06 because if you hit your target, there won't be nothing left but a cloud of feathers.
That's true.
You want a 12 gauge or something like that. I know people who go goose hunting down along the Ohio River. They take a 10 gauge with them. Okay. Shotguns are different from rifles.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
I've had experiences that have sort of, how can I say this? They have just, I don't know how to say this. They've just made me completely execute a bolt fire or turn around as far as guns.
The thing is, Jim, they've got this holy trinity.
What they can do to people.
They've got firearms, they've got fetuses, and they got sexuality, okay? You know, it used to be they said God, guns, and gays. Well, the God part covers the fetuses, but it also covers the gay part. And, you know, if by some miracle you get past them on the guns and on the fetuses, they're still going to, well, what do you think about where people go potty? And boom, you're shut down again.
That is the most ridiculous thing I have ever heard in my life. Who cares where somebody takes a dump or a leak? I don't care. I never have.
What?
Never thought about it. Never
what
bothered
a dump.
Me.
Sorry, you just brought out the Betty Davis moment. What a dump. Right. Or now it's Donald Trump referring to the White House as a dump. I understand, but it matters to them because they've got because the issue has been precisely and carefully milled and operated so as to achieve a maximum desired result.
That it has. Well, listen, Brother Bob, it's been a good conversation, and I wish you the very best in going to D.C. next week, and I hope you can get some things accomplished, and that you'll find some ears that are willing to listen, because
I sure do too, and I hope I don't have to leave here with a great big hole, trying to get the bills paid and stuff. But you know, that may be. I don't know. It's frustrating.
I understand.
But Jim, you have yourself a good evening. Keep thinking about that Halloween costume, and don't forget the joke. We got to tell that close to Halloween.
We'll try.
All right.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Jim. Calling from not too far away from here at all. Let's see. Quick trip to the email bag. Oh, quick thanks. Thanks very kindly to Sharon. Thank you, Sharon, so very much. We cracked the $400 level. We're now down at $385 to go to get out of the hole. $385, and we're out of the hole. Thank you so much, Sharon, for getting us there. Note coming from our buddy Arthur. Again, the problem of American exceptionalism rears its head. When the British ruled the world, they had a lot of the same pretensions. Remember the lyrics of Rule Britannia. When Britain first, at heaven's command, arose from out the azure main, this was the charter of the land, and guardian angels sang this strain. Rule Britannia, rule the waves, Britons never will be slaves. The nations not so blessed as thee must in their turns to tyrants fall, while thou shalt flourish, great and free, the dread and envy of them all. Rule, Britannia, rule the waves. Britons never will be slaves. And, of course, all this is taking place at a time when the vast majority of the population of Great Britain, they weren't slaves per se. They just lived lives that were lives of, what was that other Englishman? Quiet desperation. Lives that were, in the words of another philosopher, nasty, brutish, and short. Here with a couple of minutes remaining in the program, back over to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yo, hello.
Hi.
Yeah, hi.
Yay, hi. Hi, Bob. I just wanted to leave you and all the rest of the listeners with a heartening bit of news, and I'm going to share it verbatim. It's very short, and it will get a really good message across to everybody, I think.
Okay, Seal, thank you.
Yeah, it's from Daily Cause, or Daily Cause, I like to call them, reposted it, and it originally came from Daily News Wires, WIRES.com, and it's titled, "Eight is Great, Democrats Flip Second Republican Seat in One Night for Eighth Pickup of the Cycle." Tuesday night's first red-to-blue flip was in Florida, where Democrat Annette Tadeo picked up a historically Republican seat in the state Senate. The second upset came in New Hampshire, where Democrat Kerry Lerner flipped a dark red GOP district in the state House. Lerner defeated a Republican former state rep 50-48%, improving on Clinton's performance here last fall by 25 points. This seat backed Donald Trump by a 59-36 margin in 2016 and voted 60-39 for Mitt Romney in 2012. So now we have two massive upsets in a single night and one very worried party. These two flips follow Democratic pickups in New Hampshire and Oklahoma just a couple of weeks ago, and two earlier flips in Oklahoma in July. So that means there's like three from Oklahoma in state houses or Senate, and two from New Hampshire, and one from Florida, and one from, what was the other one? New York. Yeah, this trend of Democratic flips began in May when Democrats flipped another state house seat in New Hampshire and a state assembly seat in New York. This means that Democrats have now won seats from the GOP eight times in just 27 chances, almost 30% of all contested special elections.
And you know, and you know, and you know,
in the Trump era.
And you know what, CL? You just put a nice little bow on the whole program, because what better way to keep that trend going than to have the have liberals, progressives, Democrats, centrists, I care not, focus all their energies on keeping a religious, a theocratic maniac out of the Senate and electing the Democratic nominee.
Absolutely.
From Alabama. What a thing that would be.
And if people will go to the Daily Cause website and check out this, Carolyn Fidler is the reporter who did her work at USA Newswires. There's a little thing down at the very bottom of this story talking about a special emphasis that Daily Cause is giving to Virginia House and Senate elections coming up this next November. And there's eight that they're focusing on, eight seats, and they're trying to contribute towards their election effort. And it's I think it's worthy for people to just go and check it out. It's next door to, you know, it's your closest sibling over there in Virginia. So I can't tell you. I think there's a lot of things we can do, and hopefully I'll be able to contribute more either tomorrow or Friday. I know you need to go. So thank you.
I'm
really
here.
Glad
thank
I could
you.
Pass this along.
Thank you, Seal.
Okay,
thank you for
bye-bye.
Sharing. Have a wonderful evening. And that brings us to the close of the program. Thanks, everybody, for joining in the conversation. Thanks for participating. Even if it's just a matter of sitting and screaming back at the speakers, that's cool, too, because you're sharing in a little community, a little congregation that is unlike any other. And I appreciate your participation in it more than you can know. Thanks to everybody who supports the program, a significantly smaller number. Thank you so, so very kindly. Thanks to everybody who supported the program this evening. Thanks to our subscribers.
thanks for all your support month in and month out and year in and year out. We will see what the overnight crew does and hopefully knock that down a little bit from 385. Maybe we can get it down a little bit with the subscription crew. And so, if, you know, depending on what happens, we'll be around 585 or you know, 500 and something by tomorrow evening, barring dramatic changes. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks for jumping in midweek, pinch-hit utility. Chat room moderator Steve from Georgia Stan, all-around great guy. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.